Associated Bodywork and Massage Professionals, ABMP, is proud to sponsor the interdisciplinary podcast from HealWell. Massage therapists and body workers who choose ABMP membership get much more than comprehensive liability insurance to protect from lawsuits, including our members-only Pocket Pathology and 5-Minute Muscles apps. Putting muscle-specific technique videos and helpful information at your fingertips, 5-Minute Muscles has been updated with more than 80 cadaver dissection videos from Dr. Joe Muscolino to provide an even more in-depth understanding. Join ABMP to see for yourself why our members expect more and get more from their association.
Welcome to season 11. It is 11, yeah? Rebecca gave me that. Everybody agrees it's 11, so it is now. We are starting what will probably be a multi-season dabble discussion of sustainability and massage, because it turns out that this topic has a lot of pieces and crevices. So we're going to begin gingerly poking at it with a stick to see what happens, and then we're going to go from there. So we've got some really great guests, as always, really lined up.
And we're going to poke your crevices.
It's why you come here. I know why you come here. It's all right. And those of you who laughed at that, you should join the Patreon. You have consented.
That's right.
We've lined up a variety of guests with all kinds of contact points about this issue. So we should get a cool, varied look at what's going on. We hope you enjoy this roller coaster, which is maybe more of a baby coaster right now, but will eventually expand as a full coaster. While you are a captive audience, because you consented, we have a scar class coming up with Kathy Ryan on May 20th, and unfortunately you can't go because it's sold out.
Sold out!
However, stay tuned, because Kathy has requested that we be her handlers for US events, and that means there will be more, but we can't tell you when yet because it's still a secret. But when it's not a secret, we will tell you. What is not a secret at the moment is our oncology classes. We have one in Oak Park, Illinois, August 11th through 13th, and one in Fairfax, Virginia, September 22nd through the 24th. You should come. It's really fun. You'll learn a lot. There'll be happiness and joy and hands-on work and all of those things. I am Corey Rivera, which I probably should have said 5 minutes ago, but I didn't. And I'm here with my co-host, Rebecca Sturgeon. And I'm also here with Carrie Jordan and Cal Cates, who are currently in a can, also known as a car. So
we're in a can! Oh, currently across West Virginia. I have not seen Prince Albert. Yes, I did.
You're all right, so Grandpa.
That's why they sound the way they sound today. But this is such an exciting topic, they couldn't resist. So here we all are. And before we get started, we have a fantastic pun. Is everybody ready? Here it goes.
What
do you call an everyday potato?
I don't know.
What?
A commentator.
Oldie but goodie.
Yeah. Classic. Classic. Oh. We're going back in time today, so I thought I'd keep it classy and classic. I'm not sure I succeeded, but you know, it's close.
Cool.
So today we're going to fill in some background for all y'all about cultural attitudes in massage and where they kind of come from. So we're going to do a lovely trip down memory lane. I first must ask all of my co-hosts, what do you remember about history class in massage school? Or
Tara Ling.
Ling.
Ling is the hero of the story, apparently.
And that was pretty much it. Yeah.
Honestly, I'll tell you, the only thing I remember is Mesmer.
Oh.
And I was like, wow, really? This is how you're going to lead with this?
Well, and there's that thing about, my memory is that Hippocrates, who said that above all, doctors should know about rubbing. Or something like that. I don't remember the exact quote, but one of those like early doctor types said that like above all the other skills a doctor should have, rubbing is key.
I don't recall ever learning that.
Yeah, no, we were real limited on the history where I went to school. I think it's because, and this is I will say right away that this is pretty cynical of me. But I think it's because the school where I went, at least before it got bought by the national chain, was pretty storied in the city where I lived and was very very self-important about their own legacy and their own founder. So, you know, that's the history.
Now, Ben, for putting his hand up a lady's skirt. That's what I remember. Wow. Here we are. Where did it all go wrong? Although, it might be saying more about me than about my massage. I mean, possible.
So Corey, clearly we need to be educated. Said no massage therapist ever. Yeah.
The way back machine. So I want to make a point that myself and the lovely Sarah Rennie had a small session comparing textbook selections for the history of massage. And there is one timeline that appears to be in every textbook, and it's the same timeline. And it varies almost not at all. So whoever made the first one, good job you, and whoever stole it, good job you. Because that's just what we've got. And it starts with, I believed Egypt or Greece or something very, very long ago. And it ends with Tiffany Field. And that's the whole history of massage. And it fits on one page. And like, that's kind of it. And Ling is totally in the middle of it. Absolutely. So yep. He's the big one. So let us discuss, I have too many tabs open, I'm sorry. Here we go, all right. So let's talk about like the 1700s because I don't have the resources to actually go back to Egypt or Greece. But Callie, I believe you're correct about the rubbing comment from Greece. So massage has been really involved, right, in medicine, and there's this whole discussion over this whole history about how much are we medicine and how much are we something else, and where are those lines, and often they have to do with legislation, and what people are categorized as. But in like 1700, 1830-ish, we didn't really have that because nobody was categorized as much of anything because most doctors learned apprentice style and America was wild and people learned stuff and then went off and did their own thing, including anybody that might be doing rubbing type things. So there's no like massage therapy name. There are people who take care of other people. There's a lot of that. So lots of nursing style stuff. There's midwife stuff. Midwives, interestingly, for much of history, are women-only things for a very, very long time. It's one of the only things that are women-only, actually, that men just didn't touch. So hooray for all those midwives. So we got a first medical college in 1765. So that's one medical college for the country. They mostly rely on historical texts and not the scientific method. So we don't even have a scientific method yet. That's really 1930. So we're very much into like, this guy wrote this book about this thing, and that's because he wrote it down. So worship of the written word is very important here. Because it's written down, it must be right, and that's what we're going to go with, and we're just going to call it good. So any sort of rubbing that went on was a lot of like women passing down information to other women about how to take care of sick people, because was part of the job. So there was mostly just like vigorous rubbing. So we're not like gentle rubbing at all. It's very like with the palm of the hands and rub real hard. Important people at the time. So Francis Fuller, so a name that is not Ling. Yeah, we did it. Was big on frictions and hot and cold baths. There's a lot of water hydro things involved in massage. They are extremely intertwined. So hot and cold baths, frictions, medical gymnastics, which doesn't mean like hopping up and down. It means like moving people around in the joints more. He called it cutaneous exercise, which I think is a lovely phrase.
I like that.
Cutaneous exercise. Yeah. And he wrote it as this is very heroic medicine time, so like lots of purging and lots of bloodletting, and like we were really big into that.
Oh yeah,
heroic medicine. Oh yes, yes, yes. So this type of rubbing is no different. So it was supposed to expel substances from your pores, or I don't know if we really knew about pores, but from your skin, you're supposed to pull that stuff out of your skin.
This is when the mistrust of the kidneys and liver began. Those lazy buggers. We've been detoxifying from the get-go.
I am not sure we knew what kidneys did at the time. I wonder if we were just like, what are those things in there?
Yeah.
They're like beans. Maybe they do bean-related things. So most licensing, just not around, particularly not around because the government was still really, really new, and we were very suspicious of things that had to do with the old world. So organized monopolies or boys clubs, although they really liked boys clubs, but not legally. So they didn't want to give anybody too much power to have power over one thing, including medicine. So nobody really wanted to touch licensing for anything, including medicine. So people use the word massage, but they don't like the word massage goes through a lot of definitions in this time, and it doesn't become massage until like 1940s. Like, so massage in this case in the text just means good old fashioned rubbing. And thus began our trouble with definitions, which started very early as well. So conventional medicine at the time had barbers / surgeons. So people who did bloodletting and tooth extraction and hair, because that all those things go together, I guess. At least in this case, you had physicians who were graduates of some kind of school, and you had apothecaries who sold stuff. And by the end of this period, 1830-ish, we had one type of doctor who sort of did all of those things, except babies. They didn't do the babies. That was ladies only.
And except disinfecting.
We're not to germ theory yet, no. We had no idea.
Excellent.
So massage looked like mostly women in the home. There were a couple of entrepreneurial rubbers, is what the book called them. So people who did massage sort of in their own private practice. They were not educated in anatomy and physiology. They often worked in gyms. They sometimes worked with doctors, but mostly it was like strenuous exercise recovery type of deal. All right. Moving on to the...
That was based on, like, just our idea that was useful, right? Like, we're not talking about, like, evidence-informed practice here. We're like, I don't know, seems like rubbing after exercise would be good.
So it depends on what you mean by evidence, interestingly enough. The textbook that I use, which I should totally mention, which is The Emergence of the Massage Therapy Profession in North America by Dr. Patricia Benjamin. It's an incredible book. I highly recommend you read it, but it does take a bit because it's a very long history. But the book itself has a lot of really nice examples of things that people have written and had written at the time about why they were using the treatments they were using. And like, again, no scientific method yet. We don't have germs yet. So we're definitely not into evidence-based anything, but we are interested in writing stuff down, which I think is interesting. And like, as far as the lady folks go who were treating people at home and treating their communities, they had texts as well. A lot of them had to do with, you know, pick this flower and not that flower and use it for these things. But there are a few examples of what to do when you rub somebody kind of in those texts as well.
I really love old cookbooks. And I used to have one that is now escaping me, but it was written around this time. And in addition to like food recipes, it involved recipes for like oils and unguents that you could use on the skin when you were rubbing. And the really helpful tip that the very best lip balm was earwax.
Oh no.
Yep, that's what you just said. Yeah.
Yeah. You guys, you're welcome. Yeah. Aren't you glad that we called in from the road here?
Glad is maybe not.
For
maybe not the word.
Yeah, for someone who's a maybe more vegan than I am, how different is that than lanolin?
I think
for real, right?
It was the taste that got me.
It just depends on who's here. You're
well, this is the thing. Like, can we just call it wax? I don't want to know where it came from.
Well, that's a oof. That's a whole
I also
other
wonder
discussion.
How you get enough wax to anyway. Just harvest.
Oh yeah,
stuff.
You don't want
to
know.
No, we're not into bathing that much yet either. So
yeah.
So let's move on to the next era, shall we?
Yeah. All right. So this is 1830 to 1860s ish. There was a profession called medical gymnast. So this is back to the not gymnast as in bouncing around, but gymnast as in someone who moves people. And this is the start of having people who are well educated in their craft and having people who are totally making it up, which continues to this day forever about pretty much every profession that I've ever seen, but definitely ours. So Swedish medical gymnasts went to school and learned anatomy and physiology, and they had a supervised clinic that they practiced in. This is Ling, by the way, with his Swedish medical cure. They learned techniques. Ling, I don't know how much Ling you remember except his name, but he managed to make the Swedish government pay to create his school, which was a 2-year school. So he convinced them to pony up the funds for the school and for the clinic so that he could teach and develop techniques. It was called the Royal Central Institute, which, you know, naming conventions. That's the Swedish government. It got to North America by the mid 19th century. It spread to the Boston Public Schools was a great example. So there was money set aside and they were you can do this as long as you teach medical gymnastics because it's very important. Right. There was a guy named Posse, probably pronouncing that incorrectly. He created a gymnasium and an education center that was also a 2-year program. Lots of doctors were super suspicious when medical gymnastics came to America. Naturally, and then a lot of them got on board. And some doctors learned it and were like, this is amazing. It's the best thing ever. We should totally do this. Medical gymnastics did it had a really set number of exercises, but they differed depending on what people's problems were. So you'd get an intake and then people would be like, we're going to do this thing with you and then this thing with you and then this thing with you. And we're going to do that while you're passive. And then we're going to do that actively. And then we're going to progress you until you're well enough to do these things by yourself at home. So it's very pre-PT sort of style. As far as laws go, we started attempting laws against people who did not, so they call them drugless healing laws, which means they're people who are not allowed to prescribe drugs, because that's for physician only. There's a lot of people who don't prescribe drugs who do medical things. These laws, there's one attempted in 1908 and then passed in 1919 in Washington State. Ohio passed one in 1915 and Ontario in 1919. Both Ohio and Ontario are very happy to tell you about it. If you visit any of their websites, by the way, they're delighted. This included Swedish movement, massage, magnetic healing, mechanotherapy, chiropractics, electrotherapy, suggestive therapy, which I'm not completely sure what that is, but I assume it's hypnosis.
But aren't you? I think you are.
They were eventually replaced by specific laws for specific professions. So chiropractic had its own laws and I don't think magnetic healing ever got its own laws, but it was definitely lumped in with a different sort of set of laws and distrust later. Most massage therapists worked in doctor's offices because doctors thought they were the only people to qualified to administer these types of treatments for a while. And then they figured out that if you hire somebody to administer those treatments, you can see twice as many people, and that's way better. So they started hiring massage therapists themselves, which is pretty great. because that's independence for a lot of people. They are written accounts of complaints of assistants thinking too much of themselves. So we also already started that problem. Some people were trained at the professional schools. Some people just sort of picked it up. That's still how we're learning things. But there was at least a standard way to learn and a very standardized way from Ling to practice. And then hospitals started.
So at this point, I'm just curious, do you even know, like, now, do we know about, like, are women still largely the massage therapists these doctors are hiring, or are these mostly men?
These are mostly men.
Although
there are some great images in the book of women in these gyms for Swedish medical gymnastics as working and wearing uniforms, like they're ready to go, they're doing all the things. There's some great images that show you like the movements themselves, and there's one where people are just like hanging from bars by their arms and just like hanging out there and waiting, I assume to stretch shoulders or something, and they're all these like very nicely coiffed ladies with very, you know, long skirts, and so there were ladies involved. I do not know how accepted they were, but accepted enough to get photographed doing it. So that's pretty good.
Yeah, fair. Well, I don't know. That feels like it could also be a gimmicky whatever. I don't know that I'm not willing to read that as some sort of like status.
Acceptance.
Personally, I'm a little skeptical. Yeah.
I would say your skepticism is well warranted. So doctors didn't like Ling's, so they didn't like some of his theories. He was into the vital force theory, which is that we all have right life force that's connected to things. And part of his goal was to improve your life force and make that work better. So doctors were like, I don't know about that, but they couldn't argue that his anatomy was excellent. So take some, leave some, I guess. And at this point, we started to have practitioners in direct competition with physicians, because you could be an assistant or you could just work for yourself.
The beginning of the end. Cue the honest music.
So moving on to the Victorian age, this one is a great time. My first note for the Victorian age is, hoo boy.
Sounds right.
So most people have a general idea that the Victorian age was very strict, let us say. Strict morals, strict clothes, strict everything about everything. And for massage to become kind of the powerhouse that it did in this time meant a lot of things had to happen first. So the word masseuse and monsieur started being used simply because they are French and considered cool. Like there is no other reason except that being French was fashionable and it was a great marketing gimmick. So it sounds way neater than medical gymnast. It's also probably less letters on your sign. Women were considered fragile. Really fragile, like amazingly fragile. They also wore corsets, which didn't help anybody do anything, certainly not digest anything.
I'm gonna call BS on the corsets though, but that's a whole other discussion. Because I think our modern understanding of Victorian corsetry is absolutely false.
Really?
Yes. And I will refer everyone to YouTuber Bernadette Banner for more on that, because it's outside the scope of this podcast. But yeah, I think a lot of our understanding about corsetry and the fragility of women has to do with class, because lower class women were considered expendable workhorses, more like. And corsetry was not what we think it is. So I'll just leave that there.
Okay.
I came here to be the contrarian.
Would you put that in the show notes?
Absolutely. I'm going to put a link to a couple of things in the show notes about corsetry and that.
So Massage became a viable profession for middle-class women, and middle-class women were not the workhorses of the lower class. And I think we're in an odd place of being able to work and not being able to find jobs. Certainly not jobs you'd want to do or were allowed to do. So upper-class women were really sheltered. Middle-class women didn't, as far as I know, don't seem to be better for what they are allowed to do. So there's a great article also in the show notes called Physiotherapy and the Shadow of Prostitution, which is a very clickbaity title. But the article itself is quite good. So it talks about a couple of things. It talks about so germ theory, we'd like figure that out now. And because of germ theory, we started to assume everything. Like, we got into this really scientific mode about explaining things, as you do when you get a brand new idea that like changes how you think about everything. So in order to practice massage, these middle-class women pushed for massage to be thought of as a biomechanical thing as opposed to a anything else thing. Right, it's not emotional and it's not sexual and it's not any of those things. It's just mechanic. It has to do with science. It's scientific. You can't argue with that because that's like the argument of the day right now. So they organized themselves to defend against the emotional and sexual side that was being related to massage. So there was a group called the Society of Trained Masseuses in Britain that was like spearheaded this whole movement. They didn't allow men. They had a lot of rules about what you could and couldn't do. It was middle-class women treating middle-class or upper-class women, and that was pretty much it. They had an exam. They went for it. And at the time, as the article gets into, there was a lot of conversation about prostitution and disease, because again, we've gotten to germ theory and we've started understanding that you pass germs from people to people sometimes. And then this whole rest of the argument sort of blossomed from there. And of course, the people who are doing the sex work are the people who are demonized for all of that argument.
Having the germ dirty. Yep.
So these Society of Trained Masseuses.
And we, wow, how times have changed.
So they fought it with rules and tried to use the system that had started developing scientifically in order to further what they were trying to do. And that allowed them to be independent. And that was also really threatening because ladies, independent ladies are a scary, scary thing. So they got to work for themselves. They got to work on other women. They got to earn enough to earn a living, but it was also really contentious at the same time. What do I have? So they had four cardinal rules. So the first rule is members would not undertake massage except under medical direction. So we're with the doctors, can't argue with that. Members would not provide any sort of massage to male patients that might compromise propriety, by which was meant, quote, a general massage, unquote, which we will get to. So no men were allowed in society as well. They didn't accept male masseuses either. Three, members would not advertise their services except in professional journals. Obviously, where you advertise still has a lot to do with what kind of clientele you get. And I sometimes feel like it's only gotten more complicated. And then members would not under any circumstances provide drugs to patients. So this is big time opium, cocaine, all that good stuff. So no drugs, no nothing. We work under doctors. The first exam was given in 1895. So lots of moral code stuff going on. Their work environments were mostly out of ladies' homes. And then men worked in health and athletic related spaces. So gymnasiums, hospitals, sanitariums, rehabilitation institutions, and then patient homes.
So what were the things, Lori, that people would seek out a masseuse for? Like for general health and fragility?
or like were there conditions that doctors would say, oh, you have this, you should see a masseuse?
Yes, is the answer to that question. This is where we start getting into the rest cure, which had to do with women being too fragile to do anything. And the rest cure was like very, very strict in its execution. So you couldn't eat much, or you could only eat very specific things, although overfeeding was also part of this cure. There's a lot of bed rest. Daily massage was the thing, which is the part everybody liked. Women weren't allowed to like read books or have interactions because it was thought that they were like so tired and that their nervous systems were so like overworked that they couldn't do any of those things. And there was an interesting piece in the book that talked about like all of these symptoms that were in women where people were like, oh, they're overtaxed and they can't handle it. Were like contrasted in men. The same symptoms were like, oh, he just works too hard. Like, look at that hardworking guy in this industrial revolution. So like they were kind of a, like the game we play now with, you know, I work so hard, I'm so tired all the time, and I'm more tired than you, and I work harder than you. Like that game was already going on. But in men it was a positive thing, and in women it was seen as like
frailty.
Ho-hum to be a woman. It's a bummer.
I wonder if this is also like the birth of the, you know, with these rest cures where it was, again, mostly wealthy women who would go off to this place and not be fed properly, which is a whole other podcast.
Or be overfed. Like, there was like overfeeding and also not being fed, and you can only eat wheat. Like, good luck.
Yeah, forced to rest your brain. I'm doing air bunnies. But I wonder if that's part of like the birth of the perception of massage as a frivolous luxury for fancy.
Oh, folks. Yeah.
You know, and the idea, if that is also the roots of where there is some kind of disdain around relaxation massage, if that's where that was born.
I like it. Tell us more, Corey.
So I gotta think for a second. Hang on. So what we know is relaxation massage, like got its name around the 60s and 70s, but the type of massage that was going on for the Victorians was something very similar. It was a lot of like extremities, and everybody was very covered up, of course. And like it was done on like couches. We didn't have tables yet. And it's definitely like with a more relaxing intent than it is with what a athletic person might be doing in a gym with people who just like ran a marathon or whatever. And that sort of, I guess, more manly treatment. And it's also very distinct from the medical gymnastics stuff, which was like trying to be as far like conventional medicine as you could go and treat like really specific things. So yeah, I mean, certainly only rich people could afford it, and only rich women were probably prescribed it in that fashion after having a nervous breakdown from being mentally trampled for most of their lives. So masseuses are also considered uppity at this time. There's some uppity stuff still happening. The doctors like to claim that they claim too much credit for treatments, and they are unable to recommend other treatments. They only know their own treatment, which is like, right, because that's what they do. They do massage. They didn't go to medical school. And there are claims starting, though, that massage can treat serious ailments without any other help, just with massage. So that's
again, cue the ominous music. Yeah.
So that's already, you know, and part of it too is like medicine itself still doesn't have evidence-based medicine, right? Like they're doing better. Right. We've got germ theory, and like we do autopsies now, which is gross, but. And we're learning things in an organized way. And then when people start learning things in an organized way, they're like, well, all of you who aren't doing it this organized way couldn't possibly know what you're talking about either. I went to however many years of school, and I know so much better about all of the things, even though we're still kind of in infancy. We're still doing some heroic medicine stuff. We're still doing some bleeding, but there's a kind of a push for what's called natural healing, which becomes a big thing for us in our history, which is, you know, nature and walks and being outside and eating hopefully enough food, and letting your body do the work instead of cutting people open. And like, so there's a dichotomy in like thought and philosophy happening at this time. And nobody's winning. We're all just trucking along. Carrie, the next section is magnetic healer. This is for you. But we're not even talking about there's a lot of like electrotherapy stuff in here. The pictures in the book are fantastic about the crazy machines people came up with to put other people in, and we're like, it's gonna fix you. I turned on the power. It's like, as humans,
literally,
right?
Strap in.
Yeah. So this is the vital idea again. So this was now called vital magnetism, which is that magnetism is what moves your vital energy or helps you get more vital energy, or that's sort of the general idea, and that you as a practitioner could affect somebody else's vital energy. There was a crazy note in the book that said that at the time people believed that old people and young people shouldn't sleep in the same bed because there would be an energy transfer from the young person to the old person. Big belief in transfer. So magnetism got incorporated into a lot of things, partly I think because it's a showmanship thing, right? Like a lot of magnetism stuff was very like, and then we put you into the device and look, my audience, you can
it's
see this
rise!
Happening. Like,
it's
yeah, like people came for shows to see this stuff. People started using magnetism in their marketing, whether or not they did it or thought it worked, that because it was good for business, and people would ask.
Wow.
Well, see, and that also, to bring it back to like modern times, again, I wonder if this is the birth of the attitude that you need to have like 75 different modalities.
That becomes a huge thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Or things like the Theragun or tools, or, you know, which can be useful to conserve hand strength, but things like also, I won't let us go too far down this rabbit hole, but things like the massage therapy, quote unquote, competitions. That are
gonna happen here soon. Yeah.
Somehow. So it's interesting how you can see the birth of things.
I think
persist.
It's like massage as a spectacle and also as a really private thing, but also as a spectacle, like is a weird line to walk.
And I feel like it's also pointing like all of this. I mean, I'm thinking about maintenance phase and like they just had the grift, right? Where you like, they like, fix like the five most egregious health threats, and that like there's like a couple pieces here, because there's, first of all, like I feel like all of this is fueled by this awareness that the body is the spirit, and like there's some percentage of people who just really want to know what is this organism that we like travel around in, but then there's a whole bunch of other people who just are like, ooh, capitalism, like
yeah,
you know, people are excited and this might be helping, so it seems less shady than other work I could be doing, and what the heck, right? Maybe it helps, maybe it doesn't hurt, and like that each decade or each generation has its own, like, you know, activated almonds or whatever the heck, you know, the thing is, that this is the thing.
And we're going to pause there for part one of our history of massage therapy exploration of massage in the Western world. Join us next week for part two, where we will begin with the Food and Drug Administration and take it up to the modern era or the current era. Thank you very much for listening. Please send us an email at podcast@healwell.org. Let us know what you think. And you can write us a review, leave us some stars, and also support the podcast on Patreon, patreon.com/interdisciplinary. And we will see you next week with the conclusion. Interdisciplinary is produced by HealWell. Our theme music is by Harry Pickens. New episodes are available weekly through your favorite podcast outlet. And you can send us an email at podcast@healwell.org. That's podcast@healwell.org. Thanks for listening.